Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Paddy and John, how are you getting on?
Very well, Kev, how are you, mate?
Aye, fine. The holiday was nice. I was on a plane as we played the Glasgow Derby. When I landed, it was 2-1. And by the time I got the suitcases, it was 2-8. So that was a decent start to the holiday.
There wasn't much in the way of contentious decisions or dodgy referees. So,
I hear it was one of the more lax, humdrum games that I've missed. But look, for me, when I got on that plane, I wanted to at least land still at least 9 points clear. That was my hope, and that's what I got. And I got that. And I can understand why some people were maybe disappointed that we didn't go 12 points clear. But if we're still 9 points clear with 3 games to go, then it's job done. I mean, it's still a 4-game swing. And you go to the home of your biggest rivals, you get a draw, and it keeps you 9 points clear. I can't see what's up with that, Paddy, really, I can't.
I don't see, for me, I think it's the fact that we couldn't walk out of Ibrox and say, league's done. How good would that have been? And I think a lot of fans were maybe hoping that would have been the case, that just get that 3 points. Ange Postecoglou would never admit it, but he would know deep down, there's absolutely no way we'd need to lose four games and draw one and they need to go unbeaten. If we'd have walked out there with 3 points, that would have been it, job done, league's over, Champions League next year. And I think probably because we didn't get that, maybe that's where the disappointment came. But I'm 9 points after that. Can you argue with that?
John, you can't grumble, can you? Really? You'd want to be 12 points, you want to be 15 points, you want to be 20 points, you want to be gone there for a party. But to come out after a game where the mainstream media are probably right and that's Rangers back in it, we've got a title race, blah, blah, blah. A late equaliser. Job's a good one, eh?
Yeah, and we didn't play particularly well. So that's the other factor as well. So, you know, if you're walking away from a draw after we played, possibly, according to a lot of people, one of our worst games of the season, and we still came out of there with a draw, you know, that was their full team. I don't think their team can get any better than that. So I don't think there was anyone on the bench there that could improve them. So at the end of the day, I think we've got more to come. We've got more signings. We've got more guys coming through the door. They've got zero so far. I wouldn't expect them to have much more than zero. So I think this part of the season could take a real hefty swing towards us. I said before that, you know, I thought we'll win it by between 12 and 20. I stick to that. I'm confident that they can't or they won't really get any better, and they'll drop points every, you know, they'll maybe draw or lose another 2, 3, 4 games. As they did in the first half. So I don't expect that to be any expect our form to continue on the same. As Paddy says, the only thing was I was in there and, you know, ready to hear the large lady in the corner singing karaoke for it to be all over, you know. I really, really wanted it to be all over because if we had won that game, they would have known, everyone in the stadium and everyone around would have known that it was over. That was it, done. Yep. There was no coming back from that. I think it's over now, but that was the nail in the coffin for me. Weren't coming back from 12. Not a chance.
It still is a four-game swing, though, John. It still is a four-game swing.
I still think it's done, but, you know, again, that was definitely, you know, that was toast then. So, you know, it would have been a nice wee celebration. But, hey, it didn't really affect my celebrations anyway. So, you know, still managed to get some Guinness in. It was all good. But, you know, it's a pity you missed it, Kevin. But I hate missing those. And the next one, well, here's a question for you. Maybe someone can tell me this. My daughter, very, very inconsiderately, has decided to get married when the next game is due to be on. She didn't even consult the schedule. You know, she didn't look at the fixture list before she booked her wedding. It's absolutely outrageous. But
that's a rookie mistake.
Rookie mistake. It's on the Saturday. And the worst thing is my brother did it 25 years ago or something. He did the same thing. It's on the Saturday. I think it's the 8th of April. It's on the Saturday. Will they move that to the Sunday? Don't they usually move it to the Sunday? But wouldn't they have already said it by now? This is the things that are in my head today, guys. I'm like, am I going to miss this game or not? So,
I think Paddy will probably keep me right here, but I think the telly has up to 6 weeks before it to pick what game that they're going to move. And it'll probably all depend, because Sky will be shown that game, it probably all depend. They might have Watford against QPR to show at 12:30 on the Saturday, and they will move the Celtic Rangers game to the Sunday. So you probably won't know until 6 weeks before the wedding.
It definitely depends on what game's owned in the road, and then they move your game accordingly. So it's how they cover your game, isn't it? It's funny talking about
stats and that. I mean, I had a quick look back online after the Derby game, and obviously after Saturday. I managed to see the game on Saturday. Thank you to some TV providers who shall not be named, who managed to send a link to my phone. So I was lying next to a pool watching Celtic against Kilmarnock. And by the time I got to about the 65th minute, I was really glad. I'm sure it would have been great to go to Bar 67 in Porta del Carmen, but it was a 45-minute taxi ride. Oh. And I was going, can I justify a 45-minute taxi ride there and back for a game against Kilmarnock at home on a family holiday? Yeah. And I made the decision, no, I couldn't justify a 45-minute taxi ride. But I got to see it, and after about 65 minutes, I mean, it's Kilmarnock, it's Derek McInnes, ain't it? You ken what you're going to get. They didn't want a bleaching. We just want to stay that 9 points in front, go 12 points in front at that point, and that was the facts. And the game sort of played out that way, Paddy.
Yeah, and I think his comments after the game were really interesting as well, saying that it's the best Celtic side he's ever faced in Scotland. When you take into account he was Aberdeen manager when Brendan Rodgers' side when Brendan Rodgers was the manager of Celtic, that's some compliment to Ange Postecoglou after, 18 months in the job? So far, 19 months in the job. So, I thought that it was a funny game at the weekend there, the first 45 minutes were a bit huff and puff, but the second 45 minutes completely different. The amount of chances we made, the amount of chances we created, times we hit the bar, the post. I mean, it was unreal. It could have been anything up to 7-6, 7-0. So that was it was certainly one of the games of two halves. But it was a good victory, a good one to keep pressure at the top of the league. What am I talking about? To put pressure on them, I suppose, to kind of get a victory, to keep the pressure on us, as the mainstream media would call it. But it was a strange game, but good to get the 3 points against a team who I said would probably sit last week 5-5-0 when they come to Celtic Park. So, good 3 points.
What did you make of McInnes's comments, John? And is this the greatest team of Celtic team that Derek McInnes would have faced as a player and as a manager? mean, I think he had a decent Aberdeen team when we done the Invincible season. But overall, and we're not here to critique Derek McInnes's suntan or career, I think Derek McInnes underachieved when Rangers went bust and and ended up going out of the league. I think Aberdeen should have won more during that period. When you look at that period, Ross County, Inverness, I think even St Mirren won League Cups, and that should have been Aberdeen. I think McInnes underachieved. But that team that you had in 2016 pushed us close twice in two cup finals. Yeah. Even though I still reckon if Tom Rogic hadn't scored that absolutely wonder goal in the last minute of that cup final, we would have took three or four off them in extra time, because we were really, really pushing at that point. I think we'd hit the post. Paddy Roberts was utterly fantastic in that last 15 minutes against Aberdeen that game. I think McInnes had a great Aberdeen team at that point, but he was unlucky. I don't care if he was lucky or unlucky or no. To face a Celtic team which was invincible at that point.
Well, I don't see how you can make that claim. I don't see how any of us can make that claim. You know, I mean, you've just said it twice in that sentence, invincible. So, you know, until this side was to go invincible, then you can't say they're better than that previous side. So it's as simple, really as simple as that. And also, I don't think they are. I don't think we're there yet. You know, there's still a lot of work that needs to be done. You know, I think also as well, we need to see, look, at the end of the day, this is all about, you know, we need to win the league, but it's all about, if we're testing ourselves, we've had this conversation I don't know how many times, but, you know, if we're testing ourselves, the real test is Europe. The real test is what we can do in Europe, what marker we can put down there. That's how we know how we're progressing. Because, you know, domestically, you know, our main rivals have, you know, they've had their own issues. And, you know, there's actually been different main rivals, but that's another story. But so, you know, they've had their issues. I think there's now another issue with the financial fair play rules. I think that's going to really restrict them, which is, I think, one of the reasons we haven't seen much by way of transfer activity there. And I don't think we necessarily will. I think they're in a lot of trouble in terms of transfers, because as we spoke about before, we've got, I think they've got 11, 12, 13 guys coming to the end of their contract this season. And that doesn't include even some of the guys that went away. I think they take the wages for, you know, the likes of Morelos, you know, if someone gave them £1 million, I think they'd bite their hands off for it to get them off the books. So, you know, and again, I think they've acknowledged as well, they're probably internally, at least, they're not going to win it this year. So, you know, for us, the marker has to be Europe. You know, you can't say, despite the fact we went, you know, invincible, our record even with Brendan in Europe wasn't exactly stellar. So I think that's what I'd like to see us build. And, you know, I was actually talking, you know, controversial, because I saw the strap line there. But before we saw the strap line, I'd sent a wee message out saying, you know, in terms of Europe, would we change for the future? Because Iwata, now this is hypothetical before everyone loses their mind. We all like to have hypothetical conversations about players and teams. And if anyone wants to add to that or add, you know, things that they think might be a bit controversial now, but could be interesting. I was just wondering myself, because we look so porous, obviously, in Europe. Iwata, well, I'm really hoping he looks as good as his YouTube package. Maybe he's the first ever guy that will look as good as his YouTube package. But if he is...
You see my YouTube package, John? I look like Messi, Ronaldo, Pele, and Escape to Victory Pele. Because that was his pinnacle. Yeah. I look like him.
I'm not interested in seeing any package of yours, Kev.
Only fans.
I was going to say that, but I wasn't sure if it was loud in a family show.
But, you know, because I would like us to see, you know, more the way that Red Bull was playing with the 4-2-3-1. So I'd like to see the likes of Iwata and Calmac in there. But I would like to see Haksabanovic playing at 10 behind Kyogo, and then you've got Abada and Jota, that sort of thing. So that would mean leaving out very good players like Hatate, like O'Reilly. But, you know, I think you potentially get more solidity there. But that's maybe one for the future. But it is hypothetical, and I'm sure...
That's not hypothetical, John. That isn't a hypothetical. I mean, and I'll go to Paddy with us, because, I mean, Iwata actually says himself that he's a number six. That's where he sees himself playing. That's where he sees his strengths. So the signing of Abulgar and Iwata and also Gucci says to me that Ange Postecoglou sees that as a gap in the squad.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
That even though we've got Callum McGregor doing it at the moment, Postecoglou wants somebody better in that role.
I think the fact that Ange had picked O'Reilly to cover for 2 months and totally leave out McCarthy, Gucci and Abulgar tells you a story in itself, doesn't it? I mean, mm-hmm. O'Reilly was one of our better attacking threats and that more forward-thinking role. And plus, we can't continually rely on Callum McGregor as well. I mean, what if, again, he gets another injury? Are we just going to have another makeshift replacement for him? Not a natural defensive midfielder. So, go back to John's point. I think, you know, John, I don't think that what you were talking about, leaving out kind of Hatate and O'Reilly, is as hypothetical as you think, because that's the point of having a massive squad with quality all over, is it not? That we can rotate these players, that we get the opportunity to rest when we can and keep them for the bigger games or whatever. So I don't think it's as hypothetical as you would say, but although it is controversial, we don't want to be starting controversy on the pod.
Well,
but
it's mainly
that's what we're here for.
It's only It's a talking point was great, but the only reason you're thinking, you know, will he do that is because he's played a very rigid 4-3-3, you know, for the last
few finals. By that point, yeah. Yeah. Like, and he's obviously the intention of changing that. He's not changed it, and he's been very clear since he started his tenure at Celtic. This is how I play. This is how I set up my team. But what the difference is he's continually looking for talent that's going to improve every single position in that team, and that includes a defensive midfield option as well. So, you're right. A change of formation is probably highly unlikely, but. And he didn't really change his formation when he had two strikers on Ibrox when he brought on Jack Amakis. He just moved Kyogo out, didn't he? So I think in terms of McCarthy, Gucci and Abulgar, their future was determined the very second that McGregor was injured and they put O'Reilly in that position.
But see in that point, and this is, again, it's not just the players that have to learn, is it? Because, and given the quality of players that we can buy, you know, can we just make the step up by playing the same way and replacing the players with marginally better players? Like, yes. You're talking marginally better players every year. You know, doesn't the manager have to contribute to that somehow? You know, because if we are consistently losing, or you're failing to win anyway, but if we're consistently losing, surely the manager has some responsibility to, you know, have an effect on that. You can't just say, you know, surely it's not enough to just say, this is the way we do it, that's it, and you're not getting the result. Because ultimately, that's what it's about. We have to win or draw these games at the very least.
But then again, John, if we go back to Derek McInnes's comments, for me, what McInnes was meaning was this side is better than Brendan Rodgers' side, mainly because of the way that they play football. They play football in a solely modern way, which I think, to quote me, actually says, Disney give you time to breathe, whereas Rodgers was very tippy-tappy. Rodgers' style was very defensive when you look back on it, because it was all possession-based, whereas Postecoglou's style is probably in vogue with all the sockless hipsters coaches in Europe at this precise moment in time. And I think that's what McInnes was actually meaning. What I actually would want to do, I didn't want to go on Steve Clark and park the bus. I want to go and take these guys on. And yeah, I think that's what Postecoglou wants to do.
Nobody's suggesting that, though, Kev. I mean, that would be madness. I mean, that undermines everything that we've tried to achieve. And we don't have the players to do it. But there are different formations out there that these players can play. And as I say, you know, that 4-2-3-1 that Red Bull have, they have two defensive midfielders whose job is to win the ball and just move it on at the guys up front. That's it. You still have essentially four attacking players, you know. So, I think that's plenty to be getting on with, you know. So, look.
Right, here we go then.
I'm interested to see what the manager does next year.
Here's a question for you, and I'll start with Paddy on this. Do you think Postecoglou, game going to Ibrox, right? People say Postecoglou doesn't change. You look at his team at Ibrox, it probably wasn't the starting 11 that any of us would have picked. The personnel, he picked the same shape, but the personnel was a bit dodgy.
Yeah.
Looking back on it, right? So for me, was that Postecoglou showing that he will sometimes take into account the opposition that he's got in front of him, Paddy?
Do you think it was maybe he was taking into account the players he was starting rather than taking into account the fact he was playing against Rangers? I think, John, you spoke about this last week, that the fact that James Forrest was picked was because Alistair Johnson was starting his first game. And it was just to give him that little bit of extra support and extra cover there, just as he found his feet. So I think it's probably maybe a bit of that rather than changing his whole... Because he never changed his...
What about Moy over O'Reilly?
What, the fact that he chose O'Reilly over Moy? Mm-hmm.
O'Reilly, doesn't matter how much I love O'Reilly, Moy has been better than him over the last four or five weeks.
Aye, absolutely. And we were just talking about that before we come on air, that Moy he's far better. And I think O'Reilly needs a wee rest, a wee shot in the sidelines just to kind of tell him that he's not the main man in the middle of the park. He's done excellent since he's came here. Nobody'd heard anything about this boy before he came to Celtic. And he's been pretty much a revelation in that, in the centre of the midfield. But again, tried and tested in a Glasgow derby, isn't he, O'Reilly? Whereas Moy isn't. So is it again just a case of sticking to what you know to get out of that game or something and then go back to, I don't know, trying Moy in the centre of the midfield. I don't know, but he never really changed the shape of the team. He just, like you said, changed the personnel. So there's been a bit of both. I don't think Ange is in any mood to change his playing style. He's never done it at any club he's been to. He's played the same formation, the same kind of style, fast attack football, and he's done it at every level.
I don't know if he's played 4-3-3 at every level, though, Paddy. I don't know if he's played the same formation. He's played the same style, but not the same exact formation.
Sorry, definitely the same style. Maybe I'm getting my wires crossed here, but definitely the same style. It's always been about attacking football. It's always been about fast and free flowing, and putting pressure on teams. So I don't know. It's been what, nearly two seasons in the job, and he's... I can't think of any time when he's changed a formation. I might be completely wrong here, but I think it's just been completely 4-3-3 since he's been here. I mean, yeah. Whenever he was asked about it, even at the start of last season when we were dropping points, I think we'd lost three out of our first seven games last season. He was adamant, I'm not changing. So I don't think now, after losing one game and almost a full calendar year, have I meant to kind of go back on that now, because it just looked daft.
In Europe, John, I say to you that I'd love to have seen us with 15 minutes to go to game manage a game out in a league, in a lead in the Champions League? Because we didn't know what Postecoglou would have done in that situation. He didn't know, because we were never in that situation. We were always chasing the game at that point. But I had a look at certain times, and I think we've seen enough to say there's certain games where if Iwata comes in and becomes the number six that we need, against better teams, naturally Callum McGregor drops back to form a double there, and we're not as attacking as you actually see us domestically. I think we've seen it as well. I mean, I know nothing about tactics, but I can have a look and go at that. And Europe, our two fullbacks weren't inverted as much as what they are domestically. There's slight changes do happen. If we go back to Ibrox as well, John, why did Juranovic come on at left back? Was that just a case of he's more experienced than Bernabe? I'm going to trust this fella to come on and do a game where he probably wrecked the balance of the team at that point.
Well, I heard afterwards. I mean, we had a full discussion on that because it was just baffling. But I heard afterwards the two people that had been worst hit by the bug in the camp were Bernabe and Jota. But even then, I sort of thought, okay, that's fine. I can understand that then. But actually, that doesn't really make much sense because apparently Jota was the worst, and he came on and played. Mm-hmm. How does that make any sense? The thing about Bernabe, obviously, is, I mean, you're even looking at the Kilmarnock game, and he doesn't have to do any defending. It's so difficult to assess a guy, you know, when he's not defending at all. He's not showing us anything there, really, very little anyway. We're not under any pressure. So he's essentially playing like a secondary winger. So it's very difficult to assess a guy of whether, you know, how he would have fared in the Ibrox under pressure. But, I mean, with hindsight, obviously, I think we could all say he would have fared a lot better than JJ did, because he couldn't have been any worse. Not to be too harsh on JJ, but that was a shocking performance. So, the manager, in that circumstance, he had a quick decision to make. There was obviously factors there. I think there was factors there that we're unaware of. I think that sickness would have been one of them. I can't see that would have been his first choice, especially given, you know, Juranovic's state of mind, apart from anything else. At this point, my main concern about, you know, Juranovic is really just making sure we get enough money for him. But he obviously, you know, I don't think he's a factor into the plans here at all. I think we actually need to get him off the wage bill at this point. Because I remember you saying before, Kev, do you think we're doing long-term planning, having three international fullbacks, and we'll run that until the end of the year? I don't think we will, and I don't think we can. I think Michael Nicholson will have him off the books one way or the other.
It's interesting, the Juranovic thing's interesting about me, about the fee that we're going to get for Juranovic, or we should get for Juranovic. And there was a bit of a hoo-ha last week with Alan, who contributes to this pod, who's now known as the stats-based podcaster, every so often, when people are having a go at him. Now, this stat... Your value of Juranovic, John, where does it come from?
The value for Juranovic, I would say it's less to do with how I see him playing and more to do with his status. So he is an international fullback. He is a first-choice international fullback for a third-place team. He had at least one outstanding game at a World Cup. I'll be honest with you, that's where I see most of his value, because I don't ascribe, based on his performances for us, which I assume these people are also looking at, before that World Cup, I don't think anyone would reasonably have said we're looking 20 million for Juranovic or 15 million for Juranovic. I think we would have hoped for maybe 10 million, 12 million, that sort of thing. He's played in the World Cup, he's done well. I think he's maybe solidified that value. I don't think if those figures are right, I think 7 million or around about that sort of number is way, way short. Way, way short, not even close to market value. I don't care how he played for us last year. You know, just on status alone, you know, I mean, you can buy guys that haven't played for a year for that sort of money. It's on status alone, it should be significantly more than that. And we've got a sell-on fee as well. So I was looking back. Apparently, the sell-on fee is at least 10%. So that's a significant chunk of change. We need to be getting a decent return on him. So, you know, I have been absolutely baffled, I have to say, by some of these transfer stories. I just can't understand, not just for the... I don't understand from a logical point of view. I don't understand the valuations based on the market. Now, I know someone's only worth whatever someone else is prepared to pay for him, but I still don't understand the valuations. And I don't understand the players' motivations, because if the rumours are right and some of these clubs that they're lining up for, you know, same with Jackie Marcus, Urawa, Red Diamonds or whatever it is, you're going, what is the motivation to go there? What is the motivation to go to Monza, you know, whatever it is? You know, they're 15th, 16th in Serie A. Yes, they've
got... be first choice though, John, won't he?
His first choice here. He was first choice
Jackie
here.
Jackie Marcus?
No, sorry, not Jackie Marcus. I was talking about JJ.
Oh, JJ. Yeah.
But, you know, JJ was his first choice here, so I don't understand the Monza thing. And, you know, I know they've got Berlusconi behind them. But the thing about Berlusconi is, you know, they might go up the league, but they might get kicked out of the league for corruption. Yeah. You know, you don't know what's going to happen with him. That man's a wild card. So.
Everything you've said there, John, is based on facts, based on stats, is based on facts, and that's how you're getting the value. Paddy, how do you value Juranovic, and what did you use to value Juranovic? And I'll get to my point eventually.
Right, okay. So this is a double-edged one, is it? Is that what you're saying?
I
agree with John. I look at players who have played in the World Cup, who have got nowhere near to the status that Juranovic got this year, and they're going for silly money. And when you look at the players that go for silly money down south, and what you're getting for Juranovic, you're getting a fully fledged, experienced international. He's played in the biggest tournament in the world. He's now playing for one of the biggest clubs in the world, winning trophies. The guy, he's not perfect. He's been shown to be a wee bit short in the European stage, where he gets caught out of position a few times. He got caught out of position at Ibrox. But having said that, he did well at the World Cup. He had, like John says, one very good game. The rest, he was pretty solid. I think, did he struggle in the last game, possibly, when they eventually got knocked out? But aye, totally on status, we should be looking for 10 million plus for Juranovic alone. He's 27 years old. He's still got a good five, six years ahead of him in the game. As far as the sell-on clause goes, we could probably put one in there, but are we going to see any return on that? Because usually sell-on clauses are percentage of profit, aren't they? And if we're going to sell him for £10 million plus, he's not going to go for that in, say, 4 or 5 years' time. Depending, obviously, if there's a whatever team he goes for, and if he's a good runner for him. But based solely on his status alone, we should be looking at £10 million plus. Based on performances, I still believe £7 million is a joke, yeah, transfer fee.
So everything that we're actually saying here is based on things that are actually tangible, that can be measured, that are measured time and time again. So we're saying he's worth this because he's done this, 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 and this. And this is the fee that we should be getting. So we use stats and facts at those points to say we should be getting between 10 and 15 million for this player. So when somebody comes along and uses stats and facts and actually says, by the way, this guy has been great for us, but here's all the areas he improves, it gets shouted in for it. How we're using the same sort of system to actually prove why we should be getting top dollar for one of your players. I'm just having a wee kind of off at a tangent there, but it's one of these things. It's the hypocritical nature of fans going, right, I think Atati has been...
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Possibly a candidate for our player of the year. But I think it's easy for me to say and see, when I look at Atati at the Champions League level, there's areas that you're going to need to improve if you want to go to the next level. It doesn't matter how often Celtic fans want to say this boy can go as far as you want in the game. The stats and the measurements that Alan Morrison's actually using are the stats and the measurements that the coaches and the scouting will be using and going like that. He needs to improve all of that before he gets anywhere near the level that a lot of the Celtic fans believe. So the whole point is we use stats when it suits us and we didn't use stats when it doesn't suit us. And yeah. I've got an eye test here. And my eye test with Atati is he's never reached a Van Dijk level for me. After about five games of Van Dijk playing for Celtic, I went like that. Jesus, he is far, far too good for us. He is going to move on to a bigger club, but he still had to go to Southampton first before he moved to that club. And I see
Atati is, sorry, Kevin,
go mate. Atati is a vital, vital player for us, the way that we play. And that's what people are noticing more. It's not that he's became all of a sudden became a far, far better player. He's just more vital for us because he's fitter. He's not got that end of season burnout. And he's just more vital to us in the way that we actually play. The players have got used to playing with him as well. That's what people are seeing. And I'm not saying that he hasn't improved as a player. He just hasn't improved as what some folk have actually thought. I still think he's your player of the year.
I think that the reason that pile-on happened, which is very unfortunate, and I think it really is just, to me, look, I'm a bit older maybe, I think it's just disgraceful that people find themselves, you know, they think it's perfectly fine to go onto the internet and just personally, absolutely abuse somebody for their opinion on a player, whether you agree with it or not. There's no reason for you to be an animal about it. Do you know what I mean? It's perfectly reasonable to disagree on our opinions over players. That's fine, but you don't need to be. I mean, some of the things that were said were outrageous. Now, the fault, I watched that entire pod, and as with all these things, anything that's clipped and then a headline is put across it, and they'd made a mistake on the, I think the young fella end up probably was made a mistake on putting that headline there, because the headline was very misleading. If you actually watch it, as with all the stuff that Alan does, you know, he lays out the argument at great length and says, you know, and it's a very reasonable argument. It's a very reasonable point. At no point did he say, you know, Atati, you know, just simply wasn't good enough. That's not what he said, and so it's just not true. So, but people jump on that headline and just get incredibly abusive. I thought it was desperately unfair. But anyway,
it is desperately unfair, John. Then in the next sentence, they're hypocritical, going, we need to get 20 million for Juranovic because of all this stuff, and you go, you've just.
The other thing as well is, let's say Atati had a nightmare at Ibrox or something like that, then, you know, they wouldn't have been saying that. You know, everyone's on a high with Atati at the moment because he's playing very well. But, you know, it wasn't so long ago where people were less vociferous about the supporting him. So the point is, like, I think like most other players in this team, you know, he's capable of great things, but he does need to improve in certain areas. And there's no point in, you know, getting on the sort of dreamland type high horse where you're just like, oh no, he's just absolutely wonderful and doesn't need to be any better. We saw in Europe this year, all of these guys need to be better. You know, it's as simple as that. They all need to be better if we are going to play Europe and make progress there. So, you know, to slag someone for saying, or to be abusive to someone for suggesting that very thing, I think is absolutely ridiculous and outrageous. But I mean, it's very difficult to go into social media now and not get abused, just generally, never mind, you know, for having an opinion on a player. And what I've discovered you know, in my own Twitter is when I have something to say about a player, I usually frame it as a question, because it doesn't matter what you say. It could be black as, you know, in black and white as you like. Someone could have done something absolutely egregiously wrong or brilliantly right. It doesn't matter what you say. Someone is there to violently disagree with you. It's very, very difficult not to have to deal with that sort of stuff on social media. But look, at the end of the day, you know, he's a very good player. But I mean, some of the people that were making the comments, the counterpoints, you would have thought he was Maradona. He's a very good player, and we have some very good players in our team, and I'm very happy with them, and loads of progress. And actually, Hatate, that lovely wee shuffle move he's doing along the line the last couple of weeks, you know, when he's beating players in close quarters and dancing past them to get ridiculous balls across. And that stuff's fantastic to watch. You know, he's very, very good. And there's no question about that. But nobody suggested otherwise. They suggested, I think, he might not be the man for the job at the very top level in Europe. But I don't think any of our guys are, as it stands at the moment, I don't think any of our guys are, you know, top level European players at the moment. You know,
the thing about Hatate is, it's not that he needs to improve. He will improve, though. He's only been a professional footballer for what, 2 years?
Yeah.
He was playing for the I can't remember the name of the university he was playing for in Japan before he got picked up, and now he's at Celtic. So he will improve. So that tells you itself he's not a finished article. Nobody's suggesting for a second that he's not a good player, because he clearly is. But I mean, the problem you've got with stats is stats can be used to suit any argument. You could have the same stat, you could use it to suit both sides of your argument. And that pile-on that happened to Alan last week was a disgrace. But it's no a surprise to me. That sort of thing happens more often than not. I just wish people could just debate with facts and not debate with insults and slurs and all that nonsense. And just it's all right to disagree. It's all right to have a different opinion. That's the whole point of being a football fan or a Celtic fan. What I think about my team is going to be probably completely different from what you think, Kevin, what you think, John. But that's the whole point of debate. Just keep it civil. But no, Hatate,
and just to be clear, Paddy, I would think the same as you, but then we'd both be wrong.
Can't have that now, can we? But Hatate will improve because, like I said before, 2 years and he's just been playing professional football. And look at what he's doing already.
The opposite of Calmack, isn't he? You know, in terms of dog years, he's the opposite of Callum McGregor. You know, so Callum's probably about 35 at this point in player years.
I think I mentioned this before about Tielemans, that they reckon that he's played the same number of games as somebody who's 32, 33. But just because of the...
Hatate's the opposite of that.
I mean, I think Hatate's a fantastic player. Uncle Nobby Steamboat, once Hatate cuts out the slack passes, he's going to be a superstar. Once he does that at the domestic level, the highest level, when we aren't going to actually hold on to him. Remember Hatate's goal at Hearts last year, like Andy Toms, it was a peach. And we're not saying that he's not a talented player. We're just saying that folks sometimes this maybe need to rein in their expectations of players who are playing in Scotland for a reason. And I say that quite often, that they're playing in Scotland for a reason at this precise moment in time.
Exactly. If these guys were as good as we look at our players with green tinted specs on. I mean, if they were as good as we think they are, they wouldn't be at Celtic. And they're here for a reason. They're here to develop. They're here to learn, and they're here to get their next move. And that's how it's been for the last 20 odd years now. The whole Hatate thing. I just don't like the fact that we are. We seem to be not allowed to have an opinion on a player and tell people that a player isn't as good as we think they are without that kind of abuse. I just think that's wrong. And I just think some people need to have some people on that Twitter feed certainly have a long, hard look at themselves.
Yeah, you know the truth.
Definitely. I mean, we'll go back to the midfield. I don't think Iwata will actually feature on Saturday night against Kilmarnock. Is it 5:30 or 5:45 kickoff?
I think it's half five, mate.
It's our kickoff, aren't we?
I'm actually looking forward to going. This will be my first time back since the World Cup break. So, yes, I'm looking forward to going because things just happened to me the last couple of home games, which meant I haven't actually been able to go. One of them was a holiday. One of them was my dad being in hospital. I haven't been ill. It's been very, very eventful for me. But I'm looking forward to going to Hampden. It'll be a wild atmosphere at 5:30 or 5:45 on a Saturday night. I think Declan alluded to it yesterday that he reckons that Hisby, Boozer and Mary Hill will be full for about 12:30 onwards with the lads and the lassies going to the game. So I'm sure there'll be some party songs sung and the atmosphere will be great.
Do you think, Kev, that I know it's a League Cup semi-final. For me, I wouldn't be taking any risks. But do you think he will, because it's the League Cup? Do you think he'll bring Segrist in? Do you think he'll make any other changes? Do you think there's going to be a wee radical shape-up there? because, you know, I wouldn't be taking any chances. I don't think Kilmarnock have got anything to offer against us at all, and I would expect another fairly comfortable victory. But, you know, you can see in the manager's head why he's got a squad of players there he needs to keep happy. And as we've seen, some of them aren't. You know, which is why we've got some of them looking for moves away. So, you know, do you do what the English do, and, you know, to sacrifice, you know, a League Cup as a testing ground for, you know, players that might not be automatically first choice? I mean, I definitely wouldn't, but, you know,
the manager
surprised us before, hasn't he?
What I would say about that, Paddy, the last time Kilmarnock played at Hampden was against us in a final, and we ended up losing it. So that may play in the manager's mind. I can't see. I'm going to base this on what I've already seen. The manager, unless really, really forced to, does they throw players in? Iwata will be introduced like Kubayashi's been introduced as well. He'll be introduced into the squad and he'll gradually get that game. My midfield three for Saturday night, I believe, will be McGregor, Moy and Atai. That's my midfield three. And Iwata might get game time if the game is not in the balance in the last half hour.
Yeah, I think the only time he'll get on the park is if we're 2 or 3 0 up with 20 minutes to go, wouldn't we? I don't think a cup semi-final is a place to be trying experiments and giving unhappy players game time, because I think that's the time we do that when we're 5-0 up in a league game and the Leeds win. I want to win every game. I want to win every trophy. I had this discussion with some of the guys in my own network. I've got their own pod, and it's an predominantly English-based EPL clubs. And I appeared on it 3 weeks ago, and I said I don't understand the English team's mentality towards domestic cup competitions. I don't understand why they treat it with such incredulity that they do. Because when you look at some points in their history. We won the Scottish Cup with Big Pierre and that in 1985, which ended a 9-year kind of trophy drought. Was it 9 years? I think it was at that time, 9-year trophy drought. The League Cup started the quadruple treble for us under Brendan Rodgers. Every single trophy means something, and I want us to win everything. And I don't think a domestic cup semi-final is one we should be taking any chances. Strong team, I'll be playing the strongest team possible. The midfield will be, I think, what Kev's alluded to. I can't see that changing. I think the interesting part will be who we play on the wings.
David, see, and there's another comment, and I will bring it up. Segrist, has he been on the bench the last couple of games, or have I actually missed that? Is he injured? And Segrist has actually played the other League Cup games, Johnny. Will Segrist keep his place?
Well, based on Saturday's game, I mean, obviously, you know, I could be really taking a risk here, shooting yourself in the foot by being so casual about it. But Segrist is as capable as Joe Hart of standing at the back and doing nothing, you know. So, if he has the saves to make that Joe Hart has to make, I think we'll be grand. So, I really, they don't offer too much for me. I know they're sort of pinning their hopes on the big bigot Lafferty coming back. I don't see him being a particular threat. And if anything, Seagrass would be better for dealing with him because Joe Hart doesn't come off his line. If there's cross balls coming in, which is where he'd be dangerous, Joe's rooted to his line. So I would much prefer a keeper who's more likely to come out and try and, go for those balls, dominate his box. Seagrass can actually be a benefit there. But as the guy, as the commenter rightly said there, if he doesn't play now, when does he play? Because the thing with Seagrass is, that's a more difficult one. That's not trying to keep an unhappy player, happy with a number of, we're trying to bed this guy in to be the number one choice. He's ultimately, we're looking at him to be number one, possibly within the next sort of 18 months. Maybe he is, because I don't think he's a mile away from, where Joe Hart is. I mean, Joe Hart's, his best save, for instance, in Ibrox was off something, a problem that he created. I would say, I wouldn't be worried about seeing Seagrass in goal. I really don't expect Ange to make particularly any other changes, but I wouldn't be worried about seeing Seagrass in goal at all.
We're getting told in the comments that he's got a calf strain, so that's why he's been missing.
Well, in that case, I would be worried about seeing him go, because apparently he's injured.
We're getting told, folk at pay mere attention than me. Stratton's laptop, Paddy, Angie's League Cup one was hugely significant last year. And I think it's hugely significant for us this year to actually retain this trophy and get through against Kilmarnock and retain this trophy, because the chances are, I don't think Aberdeen are good enough to beat Rangers in the other semi-final. And
with Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It's about time that we beat them in a final again. It really is. And I think that this takes a higher importance about that. Make sure we're in it and just open ourselves up. I can we bet them in 2000, strangely enough, when we bet them in the Fraser Foster final, as it will forever be known from now on. And I was actually on a plane in New York at that time when that game was on. I'm having a think about this, right?
Yeah, Celtic, you just keep flying, Kev. You keep flying.
Celtic games that have been getting played when I've been on a plane. Celta Vigo away in Seville. I was flying back for Lanzarote that night. I was flying to New York, that League Cup final, and I was flying to Lanzarote again, the 2-2 game at Ibrox. So I'm undefeated when I've been in there, Paddy. I'm getting the losing last season's semi-final against them at Hampden was a sore one, and I want to put that right as quick as possible.
I understand what you're saying, and I suppose revenge on that aspect would be good, but I genuinely don't care who we play in the final. I just want to win it. I want to see Rangers get beat against Aberdeen. I don't want to see them through just so we can beat them in the final. I want to see them lose every game.
Of course I want them to get beat.
I know you don't want them to get beat, but I know what you mean when you say you want to get retribution for last season's Cup semi-final. But the League Cup, I think for me, would just be another a marker laid down for the rest of the season as well, wouldn't it? It'd be a great marker to get this treble, and it would be another good one for all the new signs that have joined the club to show you already you've won a trophy, you've got a medal to your name. So I want the League Cup, I want the treble, I want everything. I'm a completely selfish Celtic fan. I want a lot.
Yeah, completely agree. You want a treble, put them back in their box.
100%.
Damage them psychologically. before any European games next year. Just establish absolute dominance. I agree 100%.
Peter, I'm sick fed up hearing. On you go, Paddy, sorry.
No, I was just it's just a wee minor point. For something that's been annoying me since they got their new manager is recently we're getting all these warnings from certain factions in the media that watch out, Bill's about. But I've not seen anything to make me worry or to make me think that they're as close as they think they are, because they're not. We were at our worst at Ibrox, yeah. And even with the contentious refereeing decisions, they still couldn't pick up a win and a must-win game. So that was just a wee kind of off-the-cuff rant.
I mean, because you're right, Barry, because you would know yourself when they're writing about it, there's a stretch to say, oh, yeah, the run of games that Beale has been involved with.
Yep.
Involved with, not the manager. Yep. Involved with. In fact, he wasn't even... was Gary McAllister not the assistant manager? I mean, I can't remember, but... You know, I'm not even sure, you know, how much input.
He was a first-team coach, Michael Beale was. He was a first-team coach. He took training.
It's very good. So basically, that is, what's John Kennedy's record then? You know. It's a nonsense statement. There's a universe of difference between being a first-team coach and being a manager. The type of management that's required there is completely different. So it's a nonsense statement, but they're really clutching at straws because he has no record. He's got no record. They've essentially appointed a guy who's ultimately a novice, he had a few games at QPR. So they've appointed a novice manager and they're trying to imbue him with all the success of Steven Gerrard, all the success of that's a good win.
No, you can't down there, John. Calm down there.
It's a short list.
You believe the narrative. You believe the narrative that has been peddled on here, mate.
I'm going to pile on in you that minute, John.
Yeah, quite right, and I'll join in. dear me, that's a shocker. They're one success, should I say. But, you know, it's ridiculous trying to sort of say the guys in any way in that sort of league. Look, you know, we had our worst game possibly all year at Ibrox. There was obviously factors behind that. We obviously had players sick in the background. There was bad decisions made as a result. We weren't playing well. There's all sorts of things that went wrong. And we still got a draw. We still got a draw in their middle. So we still got a draw. What is it exactly we're supposed to be scared of?
I'm more worried that Jeremy Beadle appears in my street dressed as a traffic warden than what I'm at about Michael Beale's Rangers. Peter King brings in a great point, and just building for next season. Yeah. This is a good thing because we've got a number of players in that squad that haven't been at Hampden before. You need to get used to winning at Hampden because it is a neutral venue. And as Declan brought up yesterday, and I've already brought up, we went to Hampden twice in that season when Declan was a mascot against Hearts and we got beaten in the League Cup final against Kilmarnock that season, second season? Can't really remember. And before that, you've got the Ross County game again, Ross County and Neil Lennon when he was temporary charge as well. We used to hate going to Hampden round about that period. Aye. And we used to worry about going to Hampden. I remember a shocking performance against St Mirren and a League Cup semi-final. Neil Lennon was in charge as well. And it wasn't until Brendan Rodgers turned up that Hampden began to feel like we're turning up here to actually win. And I think the game against Rangers, the semi-final last season, would have been his first defeat in quite a while at the National Stadium, coming to about it. The squad need to get used to winning at Hampden, and the new players need to get used to winning at Hampden, Paddy. And there's no better time to start than Saturday night.
Absolutely, 100%. And like I said earlier on, that's just Andy's cup win last year. It wasn't just good for the fans. That was vital for the players. That kind of enforced what Andrew's trying to do, and it stuck two fingers up to the media who were constantly telling them that you can't win with a style of football. Maybe not win with a style of football, but it needs to change for certain games. But that gave us the confidence that what Andrew is doing also give the players probably that confidence that what the manager's doing is working. That first trophy, I mean, when was that final? Was that in November of last year?
Yes,
I think the final was. So when you think about it that way, that was in the first 4 months, 5 months of Andrew's tenure, and he's already won a trophy. Automatically, you get to buy in at every single person in that dressing room. If it wasn't, I mean, I'm not suggesting it wasn't already bought into before, but that just gives you that reinforcement that what the manager's talking about, what he's doing is 100% right. And that was a springboard to him going on an incredible run that took us to the top of the league in February. So, no, 100%, let's get this League Cup in the bag, done and out the road, and then that will help us kind of move on for hopefully a treble this season.
Peter McGee comes in, yeah. John. It's cemented we never stop, Mantra Paddy. And I think that's true, yeah. John. I remember talking to Tom Boyd, a wee name drop there, and he mentioned that when they won the League Cup under Janssen earlier that season, it gave them the confidence to actually go further on. And I think that League Cup win last season is absolutely massive for us, and retaining it will be absolutely massive for us as well. Winning the first trophy of the year, it seems to have, I mean, it's not the be-all and end-all, because you still want to be handed the big trophy on the last day of the league season. That is your aim at the start. But it can give you a wee bit of a boost if you win the first trophy it's for offer. And this is coming from a guy who can remember us never winning the League Cup in the 80s, yeah. Getting put out with Airdrie and all of that quite regularly, and Motherwell and stuff like that. Eh? And even during the period when your dad played, John, it wasn't a decent tournament for us either.
No. I was actually, someone had the pictures up today of the 65 final, where he scored the two pens, and that's the game that's credited for turning everything around in that era. You know, so and the crowds, you look at those pictures back then, as I'm sure everyone that's watching has done, the crowds were insane. I mean, it was like 130, 140,000 or something like that game. It was just mental. But Ange last year, it was so important. And again, I think it's important this year, because they already know that they're not going to win the league, no matter what they say. And they're clinging on with absolute desperation for us to have some sort of collapse that we're definitely not going to have, in my view. So the league is already away. That means one cup's already away. That's us get a double. Their last hope would be the Scottish Cup, and I'm pretty sure we can deal with them there as well. But look, you know, I'm sure we can beat them all the time. That's just the nature of it. But I mean, last year the significance of that was absolutely vast, because the mess that Ange inherited, and having to come from like a standing start to try and but we had this discussion before about the advantages and disadvantages of that. The disadvantages were it was an incredibly difficult job, and to try and build a team from scratch. But the beauty of it was, you know, people buying into the idea. Well, everyone that was there was already pretty much bought into it, because everyone who didn't want to be there was gone. You know, there was nobody left. You know, so it was all Ange's men or guys who have to get bought into Ange. The advantage he had was, I think, he didn't necessarily have to work too hard to convince him that this was the right way to go, because it was such a completely different way than we had been playing. And all the sort of old lags that would have been behind complaining in the dressing room were all gone. So he had a blank slate, basically. So you have the advantage of a blank slate and the disadvantage of a blank slate, which is you've got to build something upon it, and you've got to do it very quickly. It was incredibly important to win that League Cup. And I think this year, equally, psychologically, it's just another nail in the coffin for them. And I'd be confident of us getting to the final. And I have no fears about them at all. I think, obviously, you can lose a game. We could turn up and have a terrible game like we did, at Ibrox. But ultimately, you know, I think when it really matters, a neutral venue or at Celtic Park or, you know, wherever it's going to be, I think, you know, we put them to bed 9 times out of 10.
Hopefully we do, Paddy. And again, it's Hampden. It's a semi-final. Anything can actually happen. I'm not the type of support that gets over-arrogant and over-confident, I don't think. But we do have trust in this side to get the job done, which is something, as John quite rightly pointed out, we didn't have when we probably went into that League Cup final last year.
No, exactly. And I think it just kind of lends back to the point where that win last season was the springboard to where we are just now. And we're looking at another period of, fingers crossed, domestic dominance, like we've seen in the last, domestically dominant for the last 23 years. But the most recent history, what, the quadruple treble, we've only had one disappointing season. That was obviously the final season, the ill-fated 10 in a row. But I think we could be looking at easily another period of that kind of dominance over the next 5, 6, 7 years. But again, like you say, we've got to start by winning the first trophy of the season. That'll start on Saturday, hopefully.
Hopefully to get into the final, eh? Lads, yeah. I've really enjoyed being back this Wednesday, even though I still wish I was on a sun lounger in 25 degree heat with my speedos on. Again, that's for only fans. JP comes in. Time to put a marker down, Kev. That's exactly what Paddy says. It's time to put this marker down and hopefully we can carry on this generation of domination that someone came up with. And even if the press didn't actually believe it. Let's have a wee look. We'll have a look through. Paddy, mate, it's not Kev, it's Alan Carr. I actually thought that when I came live. I went, I'm looking a bit like Alan Carr. I need to lose a couple of pounds. And Michael McDonald, cheers, mate. Paddy L, that's unfairly accurate. Aye, that is right. I'll leave the last comment to Tony Cassidy. Lies, damn lies and statistics. Everybody's been brilliant.
The comment that says it's always good when Kev's on. Somebody commented on that 2 minutes ago. It's always good when Kev's on.
Oh, I'll need to find that. I was in my saved thing with.
Lunatics on social media.
I'd obviously been.
Daniel Brown, have you ever been seen in the same room as Kev? I've never been seen in the same room as Daniel Brown. I know that for a fact. Or maybe I have. Maybe I have been in the same room as Daniel Brown. Let's see it. That's it, lads. That's brilliant. Everything's been great. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for the comments. And remember, dinna be bams to each other. Eh? See you all later.
Yeah, well. We'll be right back.